What I see for individual leaders is that adopting the language of experimentation gives them a sort of credence and credibility in the work that they do, because they become experts at helping their people experiment better rather than trying to be top-down leaders who have all the answers.
Frankly, IT. Straight talk for IT leaders everywhere.
Hey, this is Jennifer Tribe, and you're listening to Frankly IT, episode 74. Well, after our spooktacular detour into IT and the paranormal in our last episode, if you haven't listened to that one yet, you totally should, we're back into more usual territory with a look at strengthening your technical leadership abilities. My guest today is Melanie Parrish, a longtime tech coach and author of a book called The Experimental Leader. In this book, she applies the principles of agile development, including feedback and rapid iteration, to the topic of leadership. Whether you're new to management or looking to up your game, I found there were tons of great takeaways in Melanie's book about becoming a more confident and productive leader at the head of a highly innovative team. So let's get started.
You're listening to Frankly IT, brought to you by Avic Networks.
Hi, Melanie. Welcome to Frankly IT.
Hi, Jennifer. It's great to be with you.
I was really excited when I came across your book, because this book, I mean, I read it, it's awesome. But at its heart, it's a book for technical leaders, right? Because as you say in your intro, anyone can use these principles and the concepts to be a better leader, but they're really going to gel for IT leaders, I think.
Well, it was definitely in my head. I have a lot of clients in IT, and it was always the measure that I looked at as I was writing this book is, does it clash with IT in any ways? I've had reviewers, endorsers say that it's tech friendly. It's always been my goal that it not have any principles that would get in the way of the way that tech works.
Or the way that a technical mind works. So I love that there's a very specific framework that IT leaders might already be familiar with that they can apply to an area that might be less familiar to them, which is leadership and management.
Yeah. And so many people are really good individual contributors, and then they get promoted in their jobs. They've always been amazing rock stars at the work they do. And then they find themselves leading people, and they're challenged by that. They need a roadmap. They need a way to think about leadership in a way that works with their technical minds.
So the title is The Experimental Leader, Be a New Kind of Boss to Cultivate an Organization of Innovators. And I know that it really takes a lot of the principles of agile development and applies them to leadership. So tell us in a bit of a nutshell, the basics of this book and the concepts in it.
I've been working in executive boardrooms for a long time, and I've watched leaders sort of live and die by their ideas. If Bill has an idea and it's a bad idea, then Bill's not cool anymore in the boardroom. And what I realize is when we're innovating, we want an abundance of ideas. We want to try things. We want there to be bounty and abundance of thinking and thoughts. And then we want to test those ideas and gather data. And so at the heart of it, the experimental leader, the goal is to foster the open flow of ideas so that the organization benefits from all of the ideas and then is able to use data to pare those ideas down and to decide whether the ideas work or not. But one of the things that I think is so important, experimenting is valuable in an organization, even if you find out the experiment doesn't work. Having an experiment that doesn't work isn't a failure. It actually gives you hard data to pivot or go in a new direction. Seeing any change that we're trying to make as an experiment helps open up the dialogue so that people can talk about it in a really real way. So being an experimental leader is about opening up that dialogue and helping lead that experimentation in an organization.
Now, you do a really great job in the book of walking people through how to set up their first experiment. So what does this look like?
The thing that I always say is this is a skill that we're learning. When people are experimenting, that's actually a skill. They just need to find a place in their own lives to practice the skill first. The experiments should always be small small enough so that you can remember to look back to see what the data was. You don't want to just make a change and then hope it goes well. You want to look at it and see, and then you want to change it again and again and again. So I always think an experiment should probably never be longer than one day or one week, unless there's a really specific reason, at least in the beginning. And then I always say that something that bugs you is a really good place to try an experiment, not something that's like your major pain point in the organization to start with, but something that just bugs you a little. For example, if I'm bugged that I get too many emails, I might try an experiment one day that I check my email at 9 a.m. and 4 p.m, and I don't touch it the rest of the time. And then the next day I might look back and go, well, how did that go? And then I might think, oh, well, today I'm going to try checking a third time in the middle of the day and see what the impact is. And I may notice that that really disrupts my progress on a project because I had to stop and check my email and I got diverted. So then I may go back to try something different. It's that repetition, the iteration of experimentation and change, that's the heart of the first experiment.
And so in that example, that would be something that you could apply yourself to something that you're doing. What about team experiments? How do you frame those and how do you get people on board?
Teams are doing things that are experiments all the time. Anytime they decide on a path forward, it's an experiment. They don't always think of it as an experiment, but it's anywhere where they're not sure, where they think, let's try this and see if it works. They're probably doing an experiment. And the thing that the team needs to do is to set a time. How long are they going to try that thing and see if it works? And they just need to set up the time frame and schedule the check-in session, the how did it go, the what did we learn? And then they can see what they could do better. What did they learn from trying it? The other thing that I think is really important for teams that are working on an experiment is if they're investing a large amount of money, they're probably not doing the right size experiment in the beginning. I always want to talk about prototyping with teams. How can they make something today that they can be collecting data on by tomorrow? So that really short time frame. If you're setting a meeting to make a meeting to make another meeting, you're probably not doing a quick enough turnaround. It's really, how do you run at something really quickly?
So this is really digging into that ethos of fail fast, iterate quickly. 3 out of 4 is better than 1 out of 1, which is something that we say at AVIC. Just really trying to move the ball down the field and iterating as you go.
Yes, and it works really well with the idea of a daily stand-up meeting. It really works with what are you going to do today? What did you learn? I think that's the question that's really important to ask. That's the piece that you might add to a standard is what did you learn from that? How will it inform you going forward? Because I think we, as humans, we want to plan and we feel really comfortable with plans, but often we forget to collect data along the way about what worked or what didn't work and then shift the thinking to reframe the plan.
Now, I wonder if some of these experiments take longer because you need a way to collect metrics that you may not have collected before. Like if you're trying to assess your progress, like the example you gave of the email, I'm going to check it at 9 and 4 and see how that works. That's a fairly easy one to assess how that worked for you. But if you're going to dive into a deeper problem, like how do we close more tickets on the service desk each day? There may be metrics that you need to track that you're not tracking now.
That's right. And you want to see what you can do. You would manually do it first because you want something that's quick turnaround. You want a prototype. So if you want to close more tickets, I wouldn't say you build software to track it first. I would say that you actually do it manually in the beginning. We're not looking for efficiency in the beginning as we start to collect data. We're looking for what we can learn. And then we stop experimenting at some point because we feel like we have developed the right solution. At that point, you can invest. But in the beginning, you want to prototype as much as you can. And efficiency is not the goal in those early experiments.
So this is not about testing software solutions or automation solutions necessarily.
No. So if you look at it from a marketing perspective, you want proof. It's like the proof of concept. You want proof of concept before you invest. What do you think you're going to learn? Test that. How do you need to shift it? Because if you invest in your solution too early, you may waste a lot of time, money, and you may not create a solution that solves the problem you think it will.
And you may also get invested in a solution. And by invested, I mean, you're like, well, we've already done this. We might as well continue using it.
That's exactly right. Prototyping always seems like it's super inefficient until you think of what it saves you in the long run, because it gives you more elegance. It's okay to try something and be inefficient in the beginning. You look for flow first, then you get efficient after you have flow.
You're listening to Frankly IT, brought to you by Avic Networks.
Now, I can see this model working really well on things like optimizing process and workflow and experimenting with systems. Do you think it also works on the softer aspects of people management?
Yeah, I've seen some really cool things. Again, you want to look where your pain is. I talk in the book about bottlenecks. It takes a lot of energy and focus for a leader to be experimenting, to keep track of experiments. So you really want to apply those to bottlenecks. You want to apply it in the places that it will have the biggest impact. So if you have a pain point with an employee, somebody who reports to you, it's a great place for an experiment. If that's somebody who needs a lot of handholding, you might experiment with having a really clear conversation about what you want to see from them. This may be a longer cycle because people cycles are a little bit longer than process cycles. You're right about that. But then you're going to query, how did that work? And then sometimes with people, leaving them alone is a good experiment. What happens if I don't give them a lot of input? Will they pick the ball up and run on their own? Or I always experiment in my tiny little organization with the size of the bucket I pass to someone. Do I give them the whole project? Do I give them a piece of the project? Do I give them a task? And experimenting to find the right flow with that is a place that I experiment with people.
In the book, you also talk about something called the kata.
The kata. Yeah,
kata.
Kata. And that's a Japanese term. It's used in martial arts. It's a practice, a kata practice. In my book, I call it the experiment kata. So there's a really clear set of questions that you run on an experiment just to test whether or not it's working. If your listeners send me an email at melanie@experimentalleader.com, I'll be happy to send them a kata card that has those questions on it that they can use to evaluate their experiments. And it's really the kata, the idea that you run it as a practice, like you're running experiments as a practice, and then you're asking these questions. And the questions are very prescriptive. I'm a coach. I've been a coach for 20 years. I don't deviate from those questions because they're powerful as they are.
The value is in using those exact same questions every time.
Yes. And not trying to be smart. It's a very repetitive and it's almost soothing. When I run myself through a kata, sometimes I'll have an accountability partner for myself and we'll just ask each other those questions every single day on a project we want to move forward. And that's a great way to start as a leader, is to find another leader in your organization who wants to do it with you.
You say there might be a time when you ask these questions every day. So would that be an appropriate thing to do during stand-up where you go through them with the team every morning?
Absolutely. Especially if you're on a tight timeline, if you're trying to move something forward, if you're not sure, if you don't have your process all lined out, if you're not really clear, if you're not just producing work, but you're actually thinking about how you produce the work, then it's a really great time to run kata questions.
A couple of minutes ago, you mentioned something about managing by bottlenecks. What does that mean?
I have studied, learned a lot from, he's no longer living, from Eliyahu Goldratt, who created the theory of constraints. He worked a lot in factory work. He's an Israeli physicist. And in constraints management or the theory of constraints, you really want to be focusing on your bottleneck. At any moment in your organization, there's a bottleneck. It's the place that's slowing the flow. And pairing a kata process, an improvement process, an experiment iteration with managing from focusing on bottlenecks, you almost supercharge yourself as a leader because you're not doing work that isn't important. You don't want to be off in left field trying to improve something that doesn't really matter. So if you're continually looking for where the bottleneck is, what stops the flow, that's a really good place to look. Eliyahu Goldratt wrote a book called The Goal, which is a really fun little management read. Totally recommend it. And it helps you start to orient to what the bottlenecks are. In any project, you're going to have the thing that's in the way of forward movement. Eliyahu Goldratt also used to say that management attention is the biggest bottleneck in North American leadership. And so where you put your attention is super important. As you add experimentation to your repertoire, you can't pay attention to everything all the time in your organization. You have to be selective. And if you're focusing on the bottlenecks first, then you'll be orienting to where you can have the biggest impact as a leader.
So if you're looking at applying this for the first time, you're looking at pain points, annoyances to start with, maybe smaller annoyances or bottlenecks, really figuring out what you want to change there, developing an experiment around that, and then using the kata to assess how you did.
You want to learn the skill of the experiment first, and it doesn't matter where you learn that skill. It's after that, as you start to do it, then you want to be applying it to your bottlenecks. You may not want to be practicing a new skill at the point of your bottlenecks in the beginning. And you may not want your people to be practicing at the most important part in the organization at the beginning. But as you skill up and as you have the skill of experimentation, then absolutely you want to apply it there.
I'm interested to know, because obviously you've used this concept a lot in your own practice and working with tech leaders, the kind of results that leaders have been able to see from applying these principles.
Experimentation and iteration, this is the language of our times. So it's not that, because that's happening all over the place in a variety of ways. But what I see for individual leaders is that adopting the language of experimentation gives them a sort of credence and credibility in the work that they do, because they become experts at helping their people experiment better rather than trying to be top-down leaders who have all the answers. It actually is in the improvement of their leadership that all sorts of things happen in their organizations, because they're more neutral as leaders. They're not top-down leaders who have to tell everybody what to do. When I see the lack of experimentation or the lack of these qualities in a leader, I see things like decision fatigue. The whole organization comes to them to make the decision, and the organization becomes mired in the inability to move because the leader has to decide.
There's a really interesting quote from Seth Godin on the cover of your book. And by the way, Seth Godin, amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. I cried when I got that.
Yeah. And he says that this book helps each of us see that leadership isn't a fancy form of management. What do you think he means by that?
Management has a sort of flavor of control to me. So what I hope he means is that leadership is about helping people find a way on their own, as opposed to telling them the way to go. I might be stretching, though, because, you know, it's Seth Godin. Who knows what he meant?
Yeah, but all the things that you've just said, right, about how this framework helps you be a leader that enables your team to do more and experiment so that you're not the one having to come up with the answers all the time. I mean, that ties right into that whole idea, I think.
Yeah, that's right. It's not about being a leader with the answers. If it's something that an experimental leader is not, it's not being the leader that has all the answers.
That's interesting, too, for IT leaders who often, as you said at the top, aren't entirely confident in their management and people skills because it might be new to them. So this is a way for them to gain some confidence in how they're managing things, even if they don't have all the answers.
I think that's really right. And I do a lot of hiring consulting, and I use DISC as a tool for hiring consulting and creating teams. The profile for IT leaders is completely different than other kinds of organizations. And they're way less likely to be top-down leaders. They're way more likely to be more collaborative and more procedure and policy oriented. And so I hope that this book is a really good fit for them for that.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Melanie.
Oh, it's been so fun to talk with you, Jennifer. I really appreciate it.
That was Melanie Parrish, leadership coach and author of The Experimental Leader. I'll put contact info for Melanie in today's show notes at avic.com/franklyit/074. Remember, if you'd like a Kata card with the questions Melanie uses in her Kata practice, send an email to melanie@experimentalleader.com and she'll send you one. In the show notes, I'll also put a link to the spot where you can buy a copy of Melanie's book for just $4.95. The URL for those show notes again is avic.com/franklyit/074 for episode 74. And that's a wrap. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly IT, brought to you by Avic Networks. Own the network.